Hey everybody, welcome to F This Movie! It's a new dawn for F This Movie. We have broken the 100 episode barrier.
Wow.
You know what that means? Syndication! Catch us 5 nights a week on UPN right after 8 episodes of The Big Bang Theory.
I think we're on after, or before King of Queens.
Oh, King of Queens.
After Yes, Dear. Right between Everybody Loves Raymond and the big
Boston Common.
Boston Common!
yeah, there you go. My name is Patrick Brownlee. I'm joined tonight for a discussion of his favorite movies by Doug. I don't even know what to talk about because we've finished our 100 episodes.
That's right.
We were going to just shut the whole thing down. We figured, no, let's keep going. We haven't talked about Doug's favorite movies yet.
I figure go out when you're on top.
People are living in suspense, right?
I go out when you're on top, and I figure on top is 100 episodes.
Yeah.
It's a checklist. 100
yes.
episodes.
Yes.
340-some followers on Twitter. That's
yeah.
the top. I can't imagine more than that. 360-some people following us on Facebook. Again, where else can you go but down?
Right.
And a blog spot. Shut the whole thing down.
If you haven't already listened to it, go back and listen to our 100th episode, which came at the end of F This Movie Fest, which was a huge success. Thank you to everybody who participated. No thank you to those of you who did not, but
yeah.
hopefully you will on the next one because it was a lot of fun and you missed out. Fools.
It really was a lot of fun. And I was thinking the other day about, cause I would watching movies for this episode or this, we call it episodes, this entry,
this episode,
this episodes.
Yes.
And I was thinking, man, it'd be a lot of fun if I was like live tweeting with people as I was
you
watching.
You just want to live tweet every movie.
I want to live tweet my life actually. Like, I guess some people actually do that.
So most even, people
yeah,
actually do
really
that,
annoying.
And it's the worst.
Buying bread again.
Like live tweeting the Grammys. Who gives a shit about the Grammys?
Yeah, right.
Listen, we have a website Grammys. That you can find at fthismovie.blogspot.com.
I think so.
Yeah. You can like us on Facebook and get us higher than the numbers that Doug can imagine at facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie if you're not already, especially because we'll be live tweeting the Oscars
right.
along with everyone else.
But we have a unique hashtag, F the Oscars,
yeah.
because fuck the Oscars, because
they're
going to
be
fuck
so
the Oscars.
Good.
Well, here's the thing. Like, the other day, we did this column, Doug Asks... It's very popular.
It is.
I don't discredit the column.
Yeah.
Doug,
I like
myself,
it because it has your name in it, but then it also has my name in it.
Right. First, my name.
Yeah,
first
yeah.
is the worst. What? Second is the best.
Yeah, I really came out the winner.
I ask you some questions, and I say, listen, I'll be out of town for the Oscars with no yeah. access to a TV. Or I might have access to a TV. I don't know. I'll
right.
be in Europe. And,
right.
I don't know if like the Oscars will be on at 3 in the morning on...
I assume so.
BBC One or BBC Two. And I said, should I be upset about this or fuck the Oscars? And you rightly said, Patrick.
You should be upset about this. What did I say?
You wrote something different on the website.
I said something, I'm a flip-flopper.
I know, you love Gladiator.
I like to change my mind.
You love Life is Beautiful.
Who cares about the Oscars? They're gonna happen, we'll watch them. Because we have to, I guess, but otherwise I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, and that's the hashtag is F the Oscars, because
yeah.
everyone's going to hashtag it Oscars, and that's lame. So if you want to follow along, and if you want to contribute to the conversation, you also should hashtag F the Oscars, and everyone search for that hashtag. It'll be unique, it'll be fun, it'll be a unique snowflake of fun.
what am I forgetting? Oh, you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. This is nice, because this is... You know, these shows were supposed to happen before the 100th episode, but then I forgot about...
Someone shit the bed.
Yeah, it was me. It was this guy. There's poo all up in my bed. I forgot about our favorite movies of the year show and our overrated underrated show. So your favorite movies and my favorite movies are getting tacked on after episode 100. But, you know, this is the first show in a long time where I'm not reading, like... listener emails,
right.
submissions,
kind of sad actually.
Win our
they
stuff
were great.
Contest.
It just
they were very enjoyable, but
it was validating. It
the
was
shows
like,
ran long.
People
Let's
were very
it.
Happy with us, and we like to hear about.
Yeah,
that, so.
I love to hear about it. Talk about some of the changes, though, because we're really going to mix things up now in the post 100 episode
right.
world of F This Movie. Can you talk about some of the changes people can expect?
Well, instead of cookies, Erica is just buying store bought snacks. It's going to be circus peanuts,
fun
and
fruits,
yeah. I think. What's a fun fruit?
It was like a fruit snack that was less like a fruit snack.
So not
then.
Just like an apple. An apple
no.
is not a fun fruit.
No.
Boring fruit.
No.
What else is different about this? I am going to be wearing pants in
yeah.
93% of all the episodes.
Can you talk a little bit about the F This Movie spinoff that's underway?
Oh dear, that one. The F This Movie spinoff. Well, I'll be honest. It's about me.
Yeah.
And I moved to Seattle.
Okay.
I've become a barista.
Wow.
And I talk about movies to my customers as a barista.
I can imagine some funny, funny things that are going
to
happen.
Well, here's the thing.
But we're going to have to wait around until this fall to find out.
The premise doesn't lend itself, but all the people, all the characters coming into my coffee shop.
Yeah.
Doug's Coffee Beans. It's all Z's. I'm just thinking Z's in my head.
Yeah. So you're definitely
Doug's actually just Doug's Beans. That's a much better joke. Or not a good joke at all, depending on what you
say. Stay tuned this fall, everybody, for I keep saying that as though one of these times it's gonna land. We're gonna talk about your favorite movies, okay? We'll get there. Cool your jets. But before we do, have you seen anything good lately?
Most of my time has been spent watching for the first time what I thought my favorite movies would be, because I'm like, well, that should be my favorite movie. I should watch that for the first time.
Yeah,
turns out We Were Soldiers, not one of my favorite
movies.
Get
out of town. What about the scene where they deliver the letters?
I like the scene where there's a flag and the North Vietnamese Army general is like respecting America and how the Americans killed lots of his people. But he respects us.
But that's not We Have Awoken a Sleeping Giant, right? That's Pearl Harbor.
I think that's Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's subtitled.
They're all bad.
What about the scene where Barry Pepper runs around and takes slow motion pictures of the atrocities of war?
Is that We Were Soldiers?
Because
I don't remember We Were Soldiers.
I do.
You remember way more than I do. All I know is we saw it with our friend Jason, who's on the American Pie soundtrack.
He's on the soundtrack.
The podcast episode of American Pie, and he'll actually join us again for American Reunion, which
it's going to be sort of an F This Movie reunion
in the spring. And he turned to you during We Were Soldiers when who was on?
There were two different. The first one was Chris Klein.
Okay,
and he said
Stifler, fuck.
And the second one was. What's his name? Sam Elliott?
Sam Elliott.
And he said, dude.
And
those were the two best parts of We Were Soldiers.
Yeah, it's like such a boring movie that you have to resort to your own shenanigans.
But it goes for crazy, horrible graphic violence also because it came out post Saving Private Ryan.
Right.
And so you have to have a guy get like sort of napalmed and then all the skin has to peel off his legs.
Right. And it's so funny because in Saving Private Ryan, so much of the aesthetic, and we talked about this a lot in previous shows, is because it's based on the actual film footage and all this stuff, and it's a deliberate choice, and I love that Gladiator, for example, is using the same methods in We Were Soldiers. We're talking about We Were Soldiers way too much. Let's move on.
That's not one of your favorite movies.
I saw Haywire. I know we've talked about Haywire a lot in this episode, and I'll be talking about Haywire later in this episode because it's one of my favorite. I'm just kidding. It's one of my favorite. It's my favorite movie. It is the favorite movie of America. I think it was voted on by America at a Taco Bell survey, actually. It's a survey handed out at Taco Bell. That's what represents America, and they voted for Haywire. You talked about Haywire with JB briefly. I liked it. I know it's flawed. People rip on, and this is, I think you touched on this briefly too, that they rip on Gina Carano's performance. It's not good by any means, but please, the reasons the movie did not work to some extent for me were not because of her, were because there was tonal issues, and it was very kind of an ugly movie. I know that sounds maybe weird or odd, but it was very gray and kind of dreary and didn't have the excitement that I was maybe expecting, just the kind of fast-paced Soderbergh, you know.
Right. Yeah, I definitely went in, like, expecting a super kick-ass action movie. And there's, like, little set pieces of action, but it's not, like, wall-to-wall. Like, oh, my God, she won't stop kicking ass.
It's
not
at all wall-to-wall.
Like, walking around.
Yeah, and there's actually a great little kind of pseudo chase where it's a chase, I guess. She's escaping people in London or Europe somewhere, and she's walking kind of along streets and hopping roofs and stuff.
Roofs like hooves.
And it's actually pretty exciting because it's not high energy, high adrenaline, but it still is, like, there's a lot at stake and she needs to duck out of the way and stuff. I thought it was actually
high voltage. It's not high voltage.
But I liked a lot of it, and a lot of, like, the performances were all good aside from, again, not even a bad performance, but just, like, not the best performance by a pretty foxy Gina Carano.
Yeah.
But so much of what I didn't like was maybe, like, the whole expository to, she's explaining in the car, she hijacks a car and explains to the kid from Almost Famous.
The kid from Sky High.
Like, everything.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't know why this, I mean, I guess I can maybe make up a reason why this is important, like that in case he needs to go to the cops and tell her story.
I think it's more just like, you know, a narrative device because Soderbergh loves to tell movies out of order, and this allowed him to do that.
You know? And I have no problem with it being a device, like, she's telling the story to this kid, but it's right. weird because they draw attention to it because she says, repeat back the names.
Yeah, it doesn't
And
really
that's where I was kind of like, whatever. Yeah. And my point earlier in that it was ugly.
She's a spy.
I was expecting it just to be more, and maybe that's my fault. My expectations were not met because right. I have weird expectations, but it was right. just kind of a very drab movie. And but the action sequences that they had were pretty great, and it's definitely kick-ass. So
yeah.
I liked her a lot, but it was good. I had fun.
Yeah.
I don't get, I mean, there was a backlash that I just didn't understand. I mean, aside from us talking about how haywire would be, you know, whatever. I also saw The China Syndrome.
Get out of town. One of my favorite syndromes.
So I was...
It's right behind The Andromeda Strain.
Frankly, I was shocked and surprised and kind of upset.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't... It didn't feature China.
No.
From the WWE. I was expecting a very different...
Great double feature with Haywire.
Reality... pornography, is that the word I'm looking for? China, backdoor to China, I believe is. I was expecting backdoor to China. I ended up with a lot of driving around Los Angeles in 1979 and Michael Douglas overacting. China Syndrome is fine. It's good. I'm trying to go back and watch a lot of old 70s stuff that is, you know, in the annals of great cinema from the 70s. And this one definitely has some awesome moments, and Jack Lemmon's great. Jane Fonda kind of annoys me, but I know she annoys a lot of Patriots.
Did you find her like annoying?
Pretty good.
Thank you.
I liked her much better in Barbarella.
I liked her better in Monster in Law.
But it was great. It just I watched over like 2, 3, 4 sittings because
always
just,
the best way to watch a movie.
Yeah, no, it's not at all. I did the same thing with The American with George Clooney. Mm. It's like this movie is hard to get through, and the subtitles are so small. So when my wife is sleeping, I can't read, and I have to turn it up, and it wakes her up, and then you know, marriage problems. That's also on Doug's Beans. There's a whole subplot of marriage problems.
Get out of town.
Coming this fall.
So the character of Doug on the spinoff.
Oh, he's married.
He's married. Okay.
He's a newlywed.
Okay. See, I like that. Because my initial thought was wacky dating adventures. If he's a single guy new to the city.
Well, here's a twist on an old standard.
Okay.
It's Washington State.
What?
Gay marriage.
Oh.
Comes out. Doug's Beans, the eponymous Doug of Doug's Beans, is gay. Or like is this. He?
Oh.
And that's where the twist. I don't want to give too much away, right. But that's where the twist. It takes a.
So it's a little bit like Lost.
Yeah, there's a smoke monster okay. comes out of my cappuccino maker. It's actually a froth monster. I didn't want to... You can't say smoke monster for fear of being sued by Damon Lindelof.
I saw a couple things. I saw Chronicle, the found footage sort of superpower movie.
And how's that?
It's fine. I don't know. It's like...
I was going to go see that. Now I won't.
You can. You won't have a bad time. But, like, here's the thing. It came out... and it kind of, I think, took a lot of people by surprise, especially the sort of online community, who were like, wow, this was better than I thought it was going to be. It took me by surprise, and I really liked it. And so maybe if I had sort of gotten in on the ground floor and gone to see it without any expectations, I would have liked it more. But
sure.
Because I read so many things, it was like, this is actually really good. Then I went in, and it was fine.
So your reaction was kind of my reaction at 1989's Batman.
Correct.
Right. Waited very a much. Year to see it. Yeah. It was like, this thing is going to be great.
Couldn't possibly live up.
No.
But it was fine.
Doesn't it suck, though, that
I
really,
I will have forgotten it in a few days when Ghost Rider, The Spirit of Vengeance comes out.
Well, that's directed by the same guys who did
Neville Frank. Dean Taylor.
It's two guys or one guy?
Two guys.
Two guys. Are they brothers or no?
No.
They're just friends.
One's last name is Neville Dean, and one's last name is Taylor.
I thought that was just a very pompous, one man's pompous
no,
name.
No, it's two Neville Dean Taylor. People who think that they should direct just under their last names with a slash in the middle.
Oh, really?
It's that's, very douchey, you know? They're like the human equivalent of Mountain Dew, but I don't care because their movies are entertaining.
They're to the extreme, then.
They are incredibly extreme.
They're a movie Code Red.
On Netflix, here's the thing. A couple of weeks ago, in that column that you were talking about, where you asked me the questions about the movies, and you said, like, hey, I want to maybe watch some silent movies. Where should I start? And I said, well, I'll start with the comedies, because I think those are the easiest to get through, and they kind of hold up still. And I suggested that you watch one from sort of each of the three most popular silent comedians. And, of course, people took issue with that, because as soon as you express an opinion, someone's going to say, no, your opinion's wrong. You should watch this or this or this. I'm of the mind that, like, whenever you want to What the hell am I trying to say? You know, lately I've been trying to go back and watch a bunch of, like, old movies that I've missed and fill in holes. And that's been fun, and that's been great. But as soon as it turns into, like, work, I don't want to do it. Because I'm a big believer in just sort of following what's interesting you at the moment. You know what I mean? So if you see, like, if I went and watched a Kurosawa movie that I'd never seen and it blew me away and all I wanted to do was watch, you know, 1950s Japanese samurai movies, then that's what I should do. I shouldn't say, like, no, but I need to get to these Godard movies and whatever. So I've kind of taken – this is a long way of saying that I've taken a break from watching classic movies and instead watched a bunch of Jerry Lewis movies on Netflix Instant.
Those could be classics.
Well, I had never seen a Jerry Lewis movie. So I saw The Nutty Professor, which is sort of his most famous one. Not Clumpers.
Oh,
not,
sorry.
I saw The Bellboy. I saw The Ladies' Man. And I saw one of... Oh, It's Only Money.
Oh, that's where he goes to the Sorbonne. A ladies' man.
Yeah, well, that's disgusting. a movie called It's Only Money, which was directed by Frank Tashlin. And I'd never seen a Frank Tashlin movie. He used to do a bunch of, like, Looney Tunes shorts. He's a big influence on Joe Dante. So that was...
Are these all on Netflix? Is that why?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's been fun. I mean, Jerry Lewis. The movies are so weird because there's so much stuff that's so painfully unfunny and dated, and just about a guy like crossing his eyes and like mugging, like you wouldn't believe. And then every once in a while, there's like a really funny joke that sort of carries me for the next 10 minutes.
Right.
So a lot of Jerry Lewis movies. The movie that I really want to talk about is the movie I didn't get to talk about last week on the 100th episode because we didn't do this little section, and that is The Night Before the Film Fest. That we did. So this would have been like February 3rd in Chicago.
You went to a movie? Because I did a cleanse before I watched the 5 movies. I had to keep my mind totally free and open prospect of Kate's boobs.
Me. There was a screening in Chicago of the new Ty West movie, The Innkeepers, followed by a Q&A with Ty West. And then they showed his last movie, House of the Devil. And I did not stay to see House of the Devil. Mike was with me. And Adam Risky was there. We actually got to sit with Adam Risky.
Oh, you talked to him?
Listener to have this movie, yeah.
That's great.
It was great. And another listener, Josephine, I believe, was there also, but I don't know him, so we weren't able to track him.
You just didn't shout out, Joe!
Yeah, exactly.
Josephine!
I thought about it, but it was very crowded. But we got to hang out with Adam, and that was cool.
A crowded movie theater with uncomfortable seats. Count me out.
We did not stay to see House of the Devil because we had the film fest the next day.
Oh, sure.
So,
and it was late. It started at, didn't it start late too?
The first movie was at like 7:30. So House of the Devil.
But with the Q&A, it's going to be
9:30 or 10. Yeah. So I've seen House of the Devil. I like it, but I actually was surprised at how much I like, how much I enjoyed The Innkeepers. I thought it was really, really great. It's just a good sort of haunted house / hotel movie with a very, very charming and funny lead performance by Sarah Paxton of Aquamarine fame.
I don't even know if I know who Sarah Paxton
is. You would probably know her if you saw her.
Is she from that surfing movie?
Which surfing movie?
I don't know.
This Aquamarine?
Is where you fill in the holes.
Where she is a mermaid?
No, probably not.
Okay.
Maybe someone else, I think.
Yeah, I think you would know her if you saw her. She did a lot of teeny bop stuff, and now she's recently started to do some horror movies. She was in the remake of Last House on the Left. She was in Shark Night, which I didn't see.
No.
And now she's in The Innkeepers. The Innkeepers...
Is there comedy in The Innkeepers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a funny movie. It's really, really great. I really, you know...
But is it legit scary, too?
Yes, I think so. If you have the opportunity to go see it in a theater, I highly recommend it. Because I think it's the kind of movie that will play really well in the theater. If you can't, it is available via like video on demand, so you could actually watch it at home. Just make sure your house is quiet and you have the lights off, because you got to give this movie a chance. And if you aren't able to see it, I believe it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray in April.
So this is a traditional ghost story.
Sort of, yeah.
What other kind of ghost story movies do you like? Or, I know you're not
hardly
big,
any.
Yeah, this is we've had this conversation.
I don't
conversation
really like the ghost
offline.
Movies. I like The Shining.
You like
but
mostly,
even that's kind of recent.
You kind of like zombie movies or kind of the other
I like
types.
Monster movies.
Monster,
and stuff,
I guess,
you know?
That's a better way to put that. And kind of murderer movies in a way too, don't
sometimes,
you?
Sometimes, yeah, less so than like actual
but
monsters.
Ghost stuff, you don't I mean you weren't a big fan of The Others.
It's fine. I
mean, and The Shining is, I guess, kind of a ghost story. But
yeah.
I keep saying ghost story.
My favorite ghost story? Ghost.
1408. Where does that rank?
Oh, gosh. Right in the middle. There are a couple really great scenes in 1408, and
yeah.
I will stand by that.
I just have an issue with that movie. I hate it when movies, and this is my issue with a lot of fantasy stuff too,
yeah.
where you can't do anything.
Right,
like there's you're fucked, and it's like, what's the point? And I know in 1408 it does a little bit of a twist on it, like he's basically in purgatory or hell, and in fantasy too, it's like, okay, I'm a warrior, I'm gonna fight this wizard, and the wizard's gonna do something, and I'm frozen. It's like, what? That's not fair, you know? I don't know. That's why Lord of the Rings sucks.
Anyway, everybody see The Innkeepers if you can. I haven't seen a ton of movies this year so far. It's my favorite.
Do you saw? I know you are doing a review on this for one of your other jobs too. But you also
yes.
saw the Tim and Eric $1 billion movie.
I did. I watched that.
Do you
want to
give a really quick, like 10-second little?
It was fine. I'm not the world's biggest Tim and Eric fan. I thought there was some stuff in it that's really funny. I thought there was a lot of stuff that reminded me of why I'm not always a huge Tim and Eric fan.
Okay. And stay tuned for the written review.
Yeah, which may happen. I hope it happens.
It better happen. Now we've hyped it up enough.
I know.
I will link to it via Twitter.
We need to talk about your favorite movies right now.
Ramona and Beezus.
This is happening, everyone. You've waited for 100 episodes to find out what are the 5 movies that Doug likes more than the other movies.
And apologies in advance because you waited for nothing.
What are you talking about?
I came totally unprepared.
Well, we know We Were Soldiers is one.
Tree of Life.
Right.
Melancholia.
Okay.
Ramona and Beezus.
The first 32 minutes of Bridesmaids.
Search for Spock.
Ooh,
I'm just looking
a good
at
one.
Posters in your room now. What else we got here? Avatar.
Don't out my Avatar poster that I paid $1 for.
The blob signed.
Yeah, by Chuck Russell, baby.
Wow, that's awesome.
I don't mess around. I so wanted to ask him to just write blob, but like he was having trouble like spelling my name. And I'm not suggesting that he was like a dummy. He just seemed a little bit out of it or maybe hard of hearing. I don't know. So
is he an old guy or?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, he might be like 60.
So ancient.
I didn't want to make any like special weird requests. So I just let him write whatever.
Yeah. Right.
But I so wanted to say like, can you just write blub and period? But I don't have to explain it. And it's, I don't have time to explain myself to the director of the Scorpion King.
That's such a joke for just like the 4 people that come into your basement and the 8 victims that never leave. Okay, so my favorite movies.
Here it goes.
They are not traditionally favorite, you know,
sure.
What are considered classic movies. I know
right.
I listen to JB's podcast. By the way, the next Doug asks Patrick questions about movies.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you to recommend, what are some good episodes of this podcast I should listen to?
Oh, I like it, yeah. Every time you ask a question,
yeah,
it's
you're
like
fuck
this
you,
has been
Doug.
Covered.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm like, dude, I know, right? Just write it out, though, for those who don't listen. Not including me, but my cousin in Canada. Saul knows him. He lives in Halifax, but he don't worry because he died. And then the paper plant burned down, so the newspaper obituary was not. It's not on Legacy either. Legacy.com does not have that. Anyway, I don't often talk about this. All right, sorry. Okay, so obviously JB's movies are very what are considered traditionally excellent movies. And
yes.
There's no denying, there's no arguing. Some of the stuff he picked, any person, any right-minded person would say these are excellent movies. In fact, one of the movies, Singing in the Rain, was actually in very tough consideration. Tough consideration?
I believe that's a thing.
Tough consideration for one of my coveted 5 spots. But I thought to myself, you know what? I love that movie, but JB has been, actually, I think JB introduced it to me in his film class in the American Virgin Islands, where he teaches film studies, and where I was for a summer. We don't talk about that either. So I chose not to because he had covered it and done a much better job. He's much better at the academic portion of movie stuff, and he edifies and teaches, and it's always great to listen because I learn stuff I never learned before. So if you're thinking that's what you're going to get here, sorry. Okay, so I'll start by this. What is not on my top 5 list?
All right, what did not make the cut?
Here's for real, though. I'm going to name some things that didn't make it.
Yeah.
Singing in the Rain didn't make it.
Got it.
Blues Brothers didn't make it. Search for Spock. Okay, I've already like got off the rails. I'm just naming.
So Singing in the Rain and Blues Brothers.
Night of the Living Dead, which is one of my favorite. It's by far my favorite horror movie.
Once again, the 1990 remake we're talking about.
Only there's a remake. What?
We're Them.
They're Us.
Yeah.
The 1969. You okay? You okay?
I'm going to pull through.
You have a case of
because I want to hear what your 5 favorite
no,
movies
you're
are.
No, you're in for a treat. So Night of the Living Dead, the 69, I think it's 69.
sure, 68 would be my guess.
68?
Whatever, it doesn't matter.
You're ruining my joke about having, like, when you put your mouth on a girl's parts and the girl puts her mouth on your parts.
With the upside down lovemaking.
That's right. You're talking about. Upside down lovemaking. So that movie, George A. Romero's horror movie, it's my favorite horror movie of all time. But yes. I talked about that if you're a reader of the website more than a listener of the podcast. Long time ago in Thanksgiving of 2010.
What? We've been around for far too long.
Thanks effing 100 movies. 100 episodes. And I kind of wrote why this movie was awesome. And I figured, well, I'd said my piece, and honestly, we do such a better job, or not even me, JB does such a better job during the October shows, the Scary Movie Month, that I'm going to leave that at the door, at the proverbial door to your basement where that girl is and all that blood smeared. Okay, so number five is, controversial. Is this the worst? You can edit all this out. Or don't. It's your call. I feel like everything is gold so far. Okay, I love war. If you listen, I love war movies. And
we heard We Were Soldiers.
We Were Soldiers is not my number five.
Okay.
Spoilers.
Okay.
It's my number four.
Okay.
My number five, it's a war movie. It's also a Quentin Tarantino movie. Film knowledge, you know what I'm talking about right now. But here, let me just, I feel like I have to defend every choice I make.
Just tell people what it is, and then we can talk about it.
Inglourious Bastards, spelled with U's and E's.
Oh, weird.
Very, very That's British weird. And wrong,
yeah.
If you ask me. I am a huge fan of Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
I think the man has not made one bad movie. We've talked about that before, too, on the Grindhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Was it
on Grindhouse?
It might have been the Grindhouse or Kill Bill podcast.
All we do is talk about Tarantino.
But no, I feel like, you know, I know there's people out there that really don't like the guy.
Right.
And they find something personally objectionable about him, his personality. He's a very kind of showboaty, just extreme personality. I don't know how else to put it. And I think people out there judge his movies adversely because of this whole nature of how he's more of a product of the movie than maybe the movie is sometimes. But I really feel like you go back and look at his body of work, and there's not one bad movie, not one single bad movie. Some are better than others. Everything is good. Some are brilliant. And I know Mike talked about, I think Mike, right, talked about Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
And that was in consideration also because I love Quentin Tarantino. And Pulp Fiction
And Mark Ahn talked about Destiny Turns on the Radio. And I was like, wow, a Quentin Tarantino acting performance?
Well,
he was
I
just like it.
This episode of American Girl with Margaret Cho where Quentin Tarantino plays her boyfriend. But
Quentin the video store clerk?
That's right. He was also an Elvis in Golden Girls.
Yeah.
Very weird. So I think Quentin Tarantino is excellent. Pulp Fiction came out at a time, 94, where I was really getting into movies, and I was watching almost everything with you. You were introducing me to a lot of stuff. I was taking film studies class with JB in Mexico, like I mentioned before. I was really kind of, my eyes were open finally, and I was seeing stuff that I wanted to see, and not what my parents had rented or what, you know, right. What I thought was good. And Pulp Fiction was great. I actually saw Reservoir Dogs before that. My brother, thankfully, has good taste, and rented Reservoir Dogs with his friends, brought it home on a Saturday afternoon. My dad was there. It was me and three of his friends, and we all sat down and watched Reservoir Dogs. And I was like, I don't know what that came out in what year?
1992. Yeah.
So I was pretty young. I was a young teenager, and I was like, what the heck is this? This is unlike anything I've seen before, which kind of fueled my desire and need to find out more about this guy. And even his entry in Four Rooms, which is maybe his weakest filmic, you know, project.
It's a project.
It's still the best thing about that.
Yeah,
shitty movie, and it's still actually pretty interesting for a little vignette. So that being said, I also love war movies, and there was a lot of war stuff that I like that I considered, but I kind of split the difference and chose Inglourious Basterds because honestly, I think that movie is going to be talked about and revered, and in 10, 15, 20, 50 years, you're going to look at Inglourious Basterds as being like so creative in ingenuity, the twists and the turns and the scenes. I mean, everyone talks about that basement scene. And I think we've even talked about it. Oh no, that was on a different podcast. I was on the Nerdist podcast. And I talked about that with Chris Hardwick. I don't talk about that in front of Patrick. But I love that movie so much. And it's so intriguing and interesting. And the performances, Brad Pitt's performance is so great. And above and beyond all that, it's a revenge fantasy where, yes, of course it's fantastical. These things could not possibly happen, nor did they happen. But so much of war movies is also that, but it's more kind of disguised as being realistic or being diegetic, and this is not. This is like, you know, tongue-in-cheek in a lot of ways. In a lot of other ways, it's very serious. It's all very realistic. I mean, what the uniforms are wearing, all the things that they're doing. I mean, it's based in reality, and it's so great.
And yet, so many of the performances are so cartoonish. To me, it's fascinating because not only was it sort of a rushed movie, but we talked about that where you had pointed out, like, yeah, but he had written it, you know, it was in his head for like 15 years or something.
Yeah,
so.
The mid to late 90s.
Right. So, but he kind of rushed it when he was shooting. And I was a little nervous about that. And I think it's awesome. I'm a huge, huge fan of that movie. And it's there's so much going on in that movie in terms of like, okay, it's Tarantino sort of riffing on war movies. It's him doing like the Dirty Dozen, sort of, but not really.
Right.
And then it's this revenge fantasy, which he had kind of already done with Kill Bill in a way, but this has real world stakes, obviously, because Hitler is involved and it's, you know.
Right.
So it could be all these things, and it would still be a great Tarantino movie because the dialogue is very good and the performances are great and there's tons of like suspense and every scene is interesting and good.
Every scene could stand on its own, I think.
Right. And so it would be Pulp Fiction. You know what I mean?
Right.
What I think elevates it beyond Pulp Fiction and beyond so much of what he's done. I think it's his best movie, but again, we've pointed out that like for us, and we're fans,
right?
When there's a few different Tarantino movies that you can watch, and while you're watching them, you're like, "Well, this is his best movie."
And that's why, not to kind of qualify my stand on this, but like, I really could go back and forth between this, the Kill Bills,
right.
Jackie Brown,
yeah,
Pulp Fiction.
Those are the three.
Yeah,
Kill Bill, Inglourious Basterds, and Jackie Brown.
Yeah, I mean, we just watched Jackie Brown recently for my birthday, and it was like I've seen it probably five times, and I'm just like, this movie is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's so layered and dense, and that's the same thing with Inglourious Basterds, and not only that, but the, like you said, the performances some have said are cartoonish. I don't think so. I mean, yes, they're kind of based on this idiosyncrasies or weird things that they do, or like Brad Pitt has a speaking style, and I know some people aren't big fans of Brad Pitt out there, mm-hmm. but some of the way he delivers the lines are so great. And Christoph Waltz, I mean, he deserved the Oscar, and rightfully so.
Yeah, but then he gave that horrible speech.
Yeah, for real.
You have made my globe golden.
And by the way, fuck the Oscars. Like that. Like that's even a reason for me liking Christoph Waltz.
I thought it was weird when he said, "I give you the Queen," and he held up his Oscar. what elevates it to me is that it's sort of the most like thoughtful Tarantino movie in terms of how much of the movie is actually about sort of the influence and power that movies exert over us, especially as movie lovers, that film plays an active role in the movie, whether it's the movie theater where everyone gathers or the silver nitrate that is used to start the fire, but also the way that all of these characters are relating to one another sort of through movies. And I don't want to get into it too much because I think it would spoil stuff. And if you haven't seen Inglourious Basterds, you really should. But there's a sequence at the end in a projection booth that sort of drives home the thesis of the movie, where a character sort of seals that character's own fate because, Jesus.
You're talking around it.
He or she
did something or didn't do something.
buys into what's on screen, but that's a lie. That's not the real thing. It's just such an interesting, because, you know, Tarantino's movies have always been about riffing on movies themselves,
right.
But never...
He has nothing if not a student of every
right,
genre
but it's
film.
Always just about sort of mashing together these things that he likes that he's seen in movies,
right.
Whereas this is actually thinking about what all of that means and what is our relationship to movie violence and what impact does that have. It's there's so much going on in the movie.
Right, and I think that's why people that do discredit the cartoonish performance of Brad Pitt, and again, Brad Pitt I think actually is really great. I mean,
we
quote him
so
all
great.
The time.
Yeah.
That they'll look at that and say, oh, that was whatever. But it's like, well, you're looking at like I'm going to say it, like a master filmmaker in 50 years are going to look at this movie and say that was a turn. Not this movie specifically, but this kind of style of filmmaking where he's mashing this pastiche of all these different genres of movies and creating something wholly new that I've never seen before. And again, I've seen a lot of World War II movies. I've seen a lot of war movies. In a weird way, kind of side note, I was between this in my head, even though I would never propose this for the podcast, and Band of Brothers, because I love Band of Brothers so much, knowing it's not a movie, obviously. It's more of a miniseries on HBO, but it's so great. But I'm like, well, no, I love... But this kind of speaks to so much, and I chose it because it does speak to the directing style and the writing style of Quentin Tarantino. And that's, again, for me, and I'm in my early 30s, kind of changing my view on film and cinema, if I dare say.
Ooh.
And the war stuff that I just kind of viscerally react to.
Yeah.
And I remember watching this in the theater and just being like, holy shit. Like, I don't think I ever put my back on the back of the chair. I was just leaning forward watching this thing.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often. The last time it happened was We Were Soldiers.
I found myself spontaneously applauding, and I'm not somebody who always claps at the end of movies.
We did sometimes a slow clap.
It was more of a sarcastic. You know, sometimes when the whole audience applauds, that's fun. Like, both times, I saw it the day it opened, and then I saw it again the next day. And both times, without even thinking, I mean, I started clapping because of the timing and the delivery of sort of the last moments.
Yeah.
I think it's so great, and it's not exactly what you would expect. I think it's a great movie. I'm fascinated to see what he does next. Obviously, he has Django Unchained coming out later this year, and I don't want to expect him to top Inglourious Bastards, because I think that's hard. So hopefully it's a different enough movie that...
And it seems like everything I've read about it, aside from the casting of some people, Christoph Waltz is in it again, but it's also cast Jamie Foxx, which I'm not a big Jamie Foxx fan, but I know people out there like him a lot.
And I'm the same way, that didn't inspire, like, a huge excitement in me, but at the same time...
His record is, he's, what, 7 for 7?
Everybody who's in one of his movies is usually really good in his movies.
Right. So. And I know he's also, like, because he hasn't made a ton of movies, I mean, his career has spanned now 20 years, he's only made, I mean, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Four Rooms, Jackie Brown, Grindhouse, Inglourious Basterds, is that it? No, am I missing something?
No.
Is that 6 movies?
Kill Bill.
I said it. Oh, whatever. Anyway, my point is
Pulp Fiction.
He hasn't made a ton. Like, you look at Spielberg, or even, you know, Scorsese, they're cranking stuff out. You know, if you're a Scorsese fan, and we all are, that you have to be so pleased that he's cranking stuff out. What I take from that, though, is like, well, I wish he would almost take an extra year and make something really excellent. And I know people love Shutter Island, and people love The Aviator. I am so indifferent towards those movies, so no. I don't know. But I really do think that Quentin Tarantino is great, and fuck you if you disagree.
Number four
is, I'm a big fan of comedies.
Okay. Who doesn't like to laugh, everyone?
It's Austin Powers and Goldmember.
Oh, the best of the three.
I believe so. No, fuck that movie. You know, I really do think, a quick little note about Austin. I think Austin Powers is a clever concept, and the first movie is actually fine. It's fun. It's
right.
If it wasn't tainted by 2 horrible sequels and just like a generation of people quoting him and just ruining it.
The
first movie is pretty inspired.
I may be repeating myself here, but the thing that's so great about the first movie, and again, you got to remember, nobody went to see the first Austin Powers. It didn't become a hit till video. But the thing that's...
Video?
Video. The thing that's so neat about that movie is, because nobody was sort of paying attention, because Mike Myers wasn't really a huge star doing something besides Wayne's World,
right?
It feels like they're getting away with something. And so many of the best comedies, Billy Madison or something that we're going to talk about, I think, in a little bit.
Next.
So many of those great comedies, it's like you feel like the studio, nobody knew what was being made. And so they sort of get away with something. And Austin Powers blows up, and then it just, the sequels are like holding for laughs, and it's just...
It's horrible.
It became such a phenomenon, and Mike Myers just bought into that phenomenon so much. But the first one, I agree,
number four is not Austin Powers, it's The Love Guru.
Boy, did they get away with something there.
Isn't Heather Graham in that movie too? No, she's not.
She's in Austin Powers 2.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
Heather Graham is in The Guru.
That's probably also... Yeah. I'm mashing up. It's a mashup. My number four favorite movie of all... This is going to change next week, by the way. I love doing the show, and I do feel kind of exposed in that, like, I'm sure everyone, how many people are in this podcast? 23 people have felt exposed in kind of revealing their choices. Unless their choices were very safe and bullshit, in which case, you know, good for them. But I do feel kind of like, if people disagree with me, that's fine. I'm nothing if not, you know, argumentative sometimes, but at the same time, it is kind of like, you know, hopefully you guys like these things. I hope that you check it out if you haven't already.
Yeah, right, really.
And it will change next week, probably.
I mean,
as soon as I watch an old movie.
Right, I have said what mine are, just to sort of lock in, like, so the people that are going to be on the podcast can watch those or whatever, but like, yeah, absolutely. If you ask me again in 6 months, like, two, if not three of them, could be totally different.
Well, we also, and this is not a spoiler for your podcast, but we were talking about favorite movies and our movies that make us so happy. We talked the other day about That Thing You Do.
Yes.
And again, not a spoiler, but that's not one of your top five, right, for the purposes of this podcast, favorite,
right,
movies.
Right.
And the reasons are because you've already done a podcast with Eric, I believe, yeah, on That Thing You Do. You've talked about it, you've written about it, it's been talked about probably almost every third show because we love it so much. And you also find a movie that kind of represents,
right,
that kind of feeling that you love.
Kind of like Inglourious Basterds for you, where it represents all of Tarantino and all of war movies.
You're right.
You know,
or like, so. And yeah, exactly. And I've got a couple of those examples. This next one, number four for me is What Hot American Summer.
Yeah, it is.
From 2001, I believe.
I believe you're right.
Directed by David Wayne from The State, starring a lot of State cast members, plus Janine Garofalo, David Hyde Pierce.
Paul Rudd. This was the movie,
yeah,
that convinced us all that Paul Rudd is a
You weren't convinced
great.
By Clueless?
I love Clueless, don't get me wrong, yeah, but he's kind of a straight man in Clueless.
Yeah.
And in White Hot American Summer, it's like, oh, Paul Rudd is so...
He's got chops.
Funny.
Right. I love this movie so much. It kind of blindsided me.
Yeah.
I don't know who... Did you introduce it to me or did... Okay, you did.
Yeah.
And I remember watching this, like, sitting... This is such a weird memory. Like, sitting on the edge of my bed, like... thinking that, like, oh, you know, I might pause it and leave. It was, like, during the day or something, you know, and there's people in the house. I was at my folks' house. And I sat there and stared at this thing for 120-some minutes, however long it is. And I didn't even know. I think when it ended, I wasn't even aware of – I didn't even know what I had just watched. I'm like, what is this thing? Like, yeah, I know – like, in the back of my head, I know that this movie is so funny. This movie is deep and dark and funny and – absurd and farcical and just all the crazy things you could possibly say about it. But my first viewing, I was kind of like, huh, that's insane. And I had this desire to like watch it right away again, right again, right away. Can't talk.
You don't need to.
And over the past, you know, 10, 11 years, I've probably seen it 15 times.
Yeah.
And it's funny every single time I watch it. It's made for, I think, $1.8 million. David Wayne, like, and Michael Showalter spent years like trying to get financing for it and wrote it quickly, shot it very quickly over a very cold, miserable spring in Northeast Pennsylvania, and you can't really tell because the movie is so fun. It's
yeah, there's for those, scenes where it's raining where you don't even know that it's
right.
raining.
For those of you that don't know, it's a throwback to an 80s camp movie like mm-hmm. a Porky's or give me another 80s
Sleepaway Camp.
Sleepaway Camp. No chicks with dicks in this movie, though. Although that would have been a good addition, I think.
Yeah.
Angela.
She's a boy.
She's the boy. So this movie is insanely fun. So now you're just quoting Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about What Hot American Summer.
Judy showed up for the podcast.
This movie is funny and great. And also, a quick little history. I was a big fan. I feel like I was in such an age in high school where I feel like I missed the boat on Kids in the Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Kids in the Hall was maybe a little earlier for the older kids than me. That those kids who were into comedy and sketch shows and improv and stuff, they thought Kids in the Hall from Canada was the best and the funniest thing. And I saw a couple episodes. I'm like, I don't know. I feel like I don't quite get it. I wasn't part of the wave. I saw reruns. And obviously, SNL was big in the late 80s with Phil Hartman and Nora Dunn. That's the second person I go with, Dana Carvey. And I, of course, Monty Python, I think, for even maybe the JB generation, that was the sketch comedy show for me in high school. And the show does not necessarily hold up. Some sketches are dated, but there's such a warm place in my heart for it. Right. I was such a huge fan of The State. I used to stay up and tape marathons on MTV back when MTV had decent programming. And I would memorize, and with you, we would go back and forth, one of us, Michael Ian Black, one of us, Thomas Lennon, as the guys with the pudding.
Barry and Levon.
And we would annoy all of our friends. We had no friends. We would annoy the people that would sit with us at the lunch table and do these sketches. And so when this movie came out, it was like, and I had kind of forgotten about it for a while. It came out and I was just blown away. And I thought, I mean, there's so many funny lines. It's the most quotable thing I think yeah. that's out there.
Well, and again, we said in talking about Austin Powers or Bridesmaids, we were talking about Bridesmaids, how subjective comedy is. And there's so many people who could watch What Hot American Summer and not understand why anyone's laughing.
Right.
And it's a movie whose reputation has grown a great deal since it came out.
It was a flop, right, when it came
right.
out.
Right. I mean, it got a very limited release. And I actually went to see it, you know, my then-girlfriend, now-wife, Erica, and I had to drive to like downtown Chicago to go see it because it was only playing on one screen. But I knew that I wanted to see it because at that time the State hadn't been around for a few years, wasn't in circulation, couldn't get it on DVD, wasn't showing in reruns. So these guys that we loved had just kind of been MIA for a few years, and all of a sudden they resurface all in this movie together.
Right.
And I do kind of have a fondness for like 80s camp movies.
That's part of it too. It's this. It's not just a straight comedy. It's. I mean, the 10 is pretty. That's their another movie that David Wayne had made, featuring all the State guys and the same cast and stuff. And it's a vignette movie with based on the Ten Commandments.
Right.
And it's very funny, but it's nowhere near as funny as Wet Hot. And I think Wet Hot lends it the subject matter and the time period lends itself to that kind of humor. And
it's just an assault of jokes. So we went, I made it a point to go see it. And, I'm lucky that Erica is still with me because I'm not somebody who like cracks up a lot, in a movie theater, but I laughed so much in Wet Hot American Summer that I think I embarrassed myself and her. I just thought it was the funniest movie I had ever seen.
And that's funny because, again, my first reaction to it, I think I laughed a lot, but I was still, like, shaking my head. Just, I don't know what necessarily this is. Right. And I know it's funny, but I can't quite respond to it. Maybe I was, like, nervous about it or kind of reserved about it. Yeah. Maybe, were you there when I watched it for the first time?
I don't know if I was. I feel like I was, but I may not have been. And again, so many of the jokes, like, you can't even laugh. It's like when I watch South Park sometimes where I'm just like, I understand that this is funny, and like inside I'm laughing, but I'm not outwardly like cracking up, but I understand why this is so clever and funny. And a lot of the jokes in the movie are like that.
It's completely insane. Like I said, it's some parts just absurdist stuff where they like, I mean, there's a whole sequence where they go into town and
oh
it's
my gosh.
Snowballing into just more and more horrible activity where at the end they're all doing heroin and just like selling their bodies for sex and stuff. And it cuts to them returning to camp and it's completely absurd. I mean, so it's a mixture of that absurd. It's a mixture of like all the cliches from the 80s camp movies where the dorky guy becomes the hero at the end. It's so great. And honestly, and I think this applies to both of us, this movie is one of a few litmus tests type movies that I have. Where I will show this, or not even show it to people. I'm not like, you know, have people captive and showing them this movie, but I will ask if people have seen this movie. If they say yes, and I ask them how it is, it really does determine not if I'm like going to be friends with them or not.
But if you have a similar sense of humor.
Absolutely. Where it's like, what do you think about What Had American Summer? And if they're like, oh, you know, it didn't work for me. I in the back of my head, I know like, well, this person's probably nice and fine, but just definitely
not going to laugh at any of the jokes I make.
Right. Absolutely. Know? And if they loved it, I'm like, okay, let's hang out in this, you know, corner. Right. And I think it's happened actually a couple times at maybe like at mixed parties or weddings or something where it's like, oh, you kind of acknowledge a person has a similar sense of humor and like, I can talk to you and this won't be a miserable night because you like this movie.
Right.
And it's so great. So
and
check
again,
it out.
More and more people have seen it now because its reputation continues to grow. Now they want to make a sequel. And so many of the people in the movie now have gone on to much bigger things. At the time, they weren't necessarily, you know, Michael Ian Black is a very recognizable face now. He wasn't at the time that it came out.
What? He was on Ed?
Yeah, right. It shows up on, like, Comedy Central sometimes.
No, not
it
Ed.
Shows
up Ed.
The bowling alley show.
Yeah.
It shows up on Logo all the time, which is, like, the lesbian gay channel, which I find fascinating. I mean, a couple of the characters in the movie are gay, but
he's a gay character, right.
Right. And Bradley Cooper, who now is, you know, a big hotshot, is in the movie. It's a great movie. I believe it's available on Netflix Instant right now. I don't know how long that will be, but if you haven't seen it, you should give it a shot.
That would be I would definitely say give it a shot. I know it's not going to jive with some people. It's one of those movies. For one of our new columns on the website is I'll watch anything.
Yeah.
And we're asking people. By the way, this is a plug for the website. So visit fthismovie.blogspot.com. And check out this new column called I can't even talk. I'm done. Honestly, we're 50 minutes in, and I'm absolutely done. I'll watch anything. Only three more?
Yeah, right.
And you recommend movies that you think we should watch. It could be great movies that maybe no one's heard of, or really bad movies that you want to confirm is really horrible. But this might be a kind of a movie where I'm like, you know, everyone needs to see this because it will, again, confirm or deny the things that confirm or deny.
Confirm nor deny.
Yeah.
It will confirm nor deny. What is next?
But real quick, though,
not moving. I'm just kidding, you guys.
Sorry, Jesus. Like, where you got to be? You're in work. You sit your cubicle, keep your headphones on, open the Excel spreadsheet, pretend like you're working, and just sit tight with us, okay?
All right.
I have mixed feelings about the sequel.
Oh, I don't think they should do one.
And that's how I feel about the American Arrested Development sequel.
Yeah, right.
I feel like there's such a thing, like, they made this little perfect piece of something.
Yeah.
And it's all these characters, and it was such a confluence of everything. And it was great, and people love it, and they right. want to recapture it, and it won't be as good. And even Arrested Development, you know, the movie, I'm sure it'll be funny, but will it tarnish or help the memory of right. the series?
No. Again, it can't live up to people's expectations, and right. so it only stands to lose, I think.
Right.
Which is a bad position to be in.
What I'm encouraged by is that, yeah, like you said, everyone, and now some people in that movie are huge, they've all agreed, even the big people, to come back.
Sure, yeah.
Like, everyone's come back. So, anyway, number one.
Yes.
Let's just skip the other ones. They're all shit anyway. Number three is Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Sure.
And here's the reason. I love Chicago movies. It's a very subjective, selfish thing. I'm from Chicago, born and raised here. I love movies that take place here and show off the city. I think it's a very pretty city. I know everyone from Chicago is annoying in how how much we love our city, but it really is a great city, except for the winters, which suck balls. I think that John Hughes felt the same way. He was from Michigan, he's a transplant, but he made this movie as a love letter above and beyond almost everything else. It was this love letter to Chicago.
Yeah.
And I said before, this movie represents a couple things for me. It represents movies when I was a kid watching.
Right.
I would watch this. We had this on VHS, and I would watch this over and over and over again.
Our VHS copy, which, again, we just, like, taped off of cable or whatever, was missing the first couple minutes.
Yeah.
So it was always jarring for me to go back, because that was the version I grew up on. And so it was always jarring to, like, put in the DVD and be like, oh, there's a whole scene at the beginning.
Where did
that
it start,
like,
on the...
I don't, it's been such a long time, I don't remember.
Okay. It kind of represents the 80s teen movie, which if you love John Hughes, obviously Breakfast Club and 16 Candles, although 16 Candles, I can leave. Same with Weird Science. There's a lot of stuff John Hughes, I'm not crazy about, but this movie, it seems to work on every level. It's the writing's great. The performances are great. The scenery is great. It's shot well. It's quick. It's funny. It's touching. It's all these great things that a teen movie should be. And plus, it's a love letter to Chicago. And the other movie that I was thinking about including, I talked about this in my Thanks Effing feature, was Blues Brothers. And that movie I love, and I can quote that. I used to watch that with my brother Rich, and we would quote that every time in the car driving to a restaurant with my folks. We would just quote, like, what's this? This car, this stupid car. We would quote Blues Brothers. And part of the reason I love that movie is also because it takes place in Chicago. But that movie is awesome, and honestly, ask me next week. It might be in my top five also. But Ferris Bueller's is great. Should all check it out. I'm sure all of you have. And
yeah, it's probably a movie that a lot of people have seen.
But there's not really much I need to say about it, aside from the fact that it is kind of speaks to growing up here, growing up just in the 80s in general.
Yeah.
And I'm really heartbroken by this new Honda CR-V commercial featuring, what's his name, Matthew Broderick.
Was it
bee-stung Matthew Broderick selling out?
It's not a good idea. Was there any element of it?
Fuck LA. That's the whole point of the movie is Chicago.
Was there any element of the movie that you think was like some sort of wish fulfillment for you? Because you were not the kind of kid who would like ever ditch class or cut school.
Are you being serious? Because I think you're being serious right now, right?
I'm being serious.
Okay, absolutely. Because there is a thing, like, I'm a very...
I was not that kind of kid either.
Not.
It would never occur to me to do that.
I cut class once, and I think it was for senior ditch day, in quotes. And I think my mom even called in for me, because it was like, Doug, take the day off, because... Like, go hang out with your friends and like, but I think there's a final.
You went to the racetrack, didn't you?
I did, and it was nice. I didn't bet on the ponies. I just sat there and watched horses race.
You picked
I don't know.
Papa's mustache to show.
I picked Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. it did speak to me in a way that I never would ever think to like challenge authority. I was the kid that got the good student discount on my car insurance.
Me too.
And so watching it was so fun to think that these kids are. I mean, and at the time, because I was probably 8 years younger than the characters in the movie when this movie came out, or maybe 10 years younger, they were adults. You know, it wasn't even so much that they were kids breaking the rules, but they were just adults having fun and kind of. Flaunting in the child molester Jeffrey Jones's face.
And it's so funny because I wonder if I saw it now, like if it was made in 2012 or whatever and I saw it, would I take issue with the fact that like Ferris Bueller is basically a static character that like he's just awesome and that's it. And the world is his playground and everyone is his bitch.
Right.
His only real like sort of character flaw is maybe hubris, but he never has to pay for it. It never becomes an issue.
There's one scene where there's like a glean of like you kind of glean
a glean
where you kind of there's a hint at him showing, like, kind of, well, the whole Abe Froman thing is kind of him almost, and still, he gets his way.
Right, right.
But it's almost him not winning, and he starts to panic, and he starts to show a little, his petty ways. And where Cameron, like, tries to fake kill himself.
Right.
And he is genuinely flipped out, because this was not to his plan. That's the moment. But yeah, it doesn't really, it's really kind of a side, it doesn't diverge.
And that is, you know, the central joke of the movie, that like, he always gets his way.
Right.
And
thankfully they never did a sequel, because you can't, again, you can't capture that.
No, it would ruin it. And, you know, it's basically Cameron's movie anyway. I mean, Ferris Bueller is like our guide, but Cameron is the character who changes.
Right.
You know, it's a really, it's a good movie. It's a movie, you know, especially if you grew up in the '80s, that everybody has fun.
It's kind of my obligatory, I will not spend any time defending this movie either. I mean, I think everyone out there probably likes it, but you probably will question, like, why is it on your top five when Casablanca's out there and Citizen Kane? It's like, yeah, I know. They're great. These are mine, so.
They're not shot in Chicago.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, the reason Doug loves The Fugitive.
That's right.
Kissing a Fool.
Adventures in Babysitting.
Adventures in Babysitting and other Chicago movies. The Dark Knight?
I think that's it. I think we covered all the Chicago movies.
Cool. Oh, that movie that's out right now, The Vow.
In Chicago?
A lot of that shot in Chicago. Scandalous. We got Southport, apparently. We made over $40 million.
Because women love Channing the Hot Robot Tatum.
Damn. Yeah.
I liked him in Haywire.
I liked him in G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra.
Number two.
G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, let's get through this, because I know we're at the hour mark, and some of you have corporate meetings to attend via a go-to meeting.
Yes, I'm assuming that's a thing
that people use. Number two is a controversial choice, but it is probably the one I feel the most passion for, and it's Starship Troopers.
Yes.
I fucking love that movie, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Yeah,
That's it. Number one, Adventures in Babysitting.
Well, Starship Troopers is another sort of possible litmus test movie.
Absolutely.
Because I think there are people who watch that movie and maybe are entertained by it. I think there are people who watch that movie and say, that's the stupidest movie I've ever seen.
And
that, those people are like dummies.
But I can't even really, like, argue with them, because again, it's I don't want to. I mean, I could prove all the ways that they're wrong, but it's like, I'm not going to argue with you, because it's like, if you already come from that perspective,
right,
like, we're done here.
We went to see Starship Troopers in 1997 opening night, because for any of you who remember the trailer, it was ridiculous. It didn't seem like a real movie, like, and it was called Starship Troopers, and I wasn't familiar with the Robert Heinlein novel at all.
No,
so
I'm still not.
I just, when the title card came up at the end of the trailer, it's like, boy, that movie could have been called anything. And they were Starship Troopers. And so we did go to see it, sort of ironically, on opening night in 1997. And I very distinctly remember about halfway through the movie.
No, I think it was before. I mean, was it halfway? Would say maybe a third.
See, I think it was a third of the way through the movie that I turned to you and said that Denise Richards, an actress I didn't know at the time, I said, she's so pretty, it's distracting.
Yeah.
I no longer think that. But then I feel like it was about halfway that we both turned to each other, just like grinning, and both sort of said, like, I don't ever want this to be over.
It was such a visceral reaction where, again, you go into this thing. I think both of us were expecting the entire time to have fun.
Right.
That this movie is going to be ridiculous.
Right.
And I think that part of us thought that it's going to be fun or ridiculous because we're going to make fun of it.
Movie totally works on that level. Like, it's super entertaining and violent, and there's tons of, like, military action.
It's got everything.
Crazy shit. What we weren't anticipating is how smart and funny and satirical the movie is, which is what makes it a great movie.
Right. All the fun stuff, it meets the Varsity Blues test. It's got great action sequences. Yeah. It's got great action sequences. It's got comedy, it's got titties, it really meets a lot of the criteria for the reasons I like movies. But again, going in there, I'm not even going to say, I would not come from the perspective of, if you don't get this movie, then screw you. Because that's such a fucking stupid, douchey perspective to come from too. Like, you either get this or you don't. And I hate when people say that to me, because most of the time they're wrong and I get it more than they do because I'm so smart. But I'm not going to say that because you either like respond to something or you don't. And that's the only, I mean, honestly, in a lot of ways, that's how I feel about this movie.
But don't you feel like sometimes it's ignorant to say, like, for somebody to watch Starship Troopers, and I understand what you're saying, that's a good attitude to have.
And that's what I'm saying. I wish I was more like you. Temper and have the ballast of saying,
like,
listen, I don't expect my mom to watch Starship Troopers and be like, that movie was inspired. I think
guess,
my mom would
and,
be like,
and I
what thousands have, bugs, you know?
And I get, you know, I'm not suggesting you call your mom a dummy, although she sounds a little bit dumb from
She's
what you're saying.
Dumb.
But, like, if somebody watched it and then said, like, that was the worst movie I've ever seen, it was so stupid, would any part of you say, like, you're wrong?
Yeah.
You don't...
Yes.
There's more to it than you are grasping.
If you're giving me that very specific example, of course I would respond in the way in which you're suggesting.
Right.
I would respond and say, you're wrong. There's more to it. But I tend to think that for those people out there that aren't crazy about this movie, a lot of it will come across as like, what? I'm confused. It would like indifferent,
yeah,
passive kind of rejection of it.
Right.
And in that case, I can't say, well, you don't get it.
No, that I understand.
It would just be like, well, it didn't quite click on all cylinders. It clicks on every cylinder. I watched it again with the commentary. By the way, don't watch the commentary. It's there's two commentaries.
You just get to hear Paul Verhoeven say Phil Tippett a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love the way he says Phil Tippett.
And it's so funny how, like, weirdly, I guess it came out. They recorded I'm sorry, I'm thinking of the Wet Hot American Summer commentary. They recorded the Wet Hot American Summer commentary the day after the U.S. invaded Afghanistan, is like a weird, like, and they bring it up once, and I'm like, oh, that's really weird.
Yeah.
But I got to think that they recorded the Starship Troopers commentary probably end of late 90s. Although they might have done the 2000s.
No. Well, I don't know. The original DVD had a commentary.
Because there's two commentaries. One is with Paul Verhoeven and a producer, I think.
Okay.
And then the other one, the one I listened to was with Paul Verhoeven, Casper Van Dien, Dina Meyer, and Neil Patrick Harris.
That one got recorded later, I think.
Okay.
The other one, I think, was recorded when the first DVD came out in 98.
And the reason I say that is because Paul Verhoeven, a lot of times, is kind of questioning America and, like, this is where we're at right now with fascism, and, like, it just smacked of, like, early Bush propaganda knee-jerk reaction to it.
Right.
Of course, he's a Dutchman who's very liberal and open-minded and has different views.
Made Showgirls.
That's another, and number one, Showgirls. But I think Starship Troopers is so fun and serious, and it has, again, it also subscribes to the whole World War II aesthetic and the Gestapo uniform. I mean, they make no bones about it. It's kind of on the nose, which is also another reason why it works, because it is a foreign director doing this thing. It's all this mixture of every actor in the movie appeared on a Fox drama, I believe, like Melrose Place or 90210.
Yeah.
Like every single
Neil Patrick Harris, who seems to be the only one who knows the movie he's in.
Right.
And that's, again, one of the movie's charms, is that you watch it and, like, Casper Van Dien is great. I don't know how much he knows what movie he's in or not. And it doesn't matter, because if he did, maybe the performance would be all, like, winky, and you don't want that. You want him to be just, like, square jawed.
Everyone in this is incredibly earnest, and that's what makes it work so well.
I mean,
Denise Richards, I think she even later said she doesn't stop smiling through the entire movie, because she's, like, trying her best. I think even Casper Van Dien had commented that he would do anything for this movie.
He follows us on Twitter, though, so Casper, just so you know, this is one of our favorite movies.
It is absolutely one of my favorite, our favorite movies. He talked about how Paul Verhoeven gave him and everyone, with the exception maybe of Dina Meyer, who had appeared in some previously big movies.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Everyone in there, this was like their first blockbuster, in quotes, movies. And they would have done anything for it. And they were giving these sincere, and partially because their direction was from a foreigner. Probably.
Right,
No, like Dina Meyer said, like, she gets impaled in the lung by...
Spoilers.
She survives.
For about 7 seconds. Spoilers.
And Paul Verhoeven said, you have to scream. And she's like, I just got it. And he's like, no, scream. And so they're only responding to his direction. And so all of that is incredibly earnest, incredibly face value, on the nose, all that, all those cliches. And for whatever reason, it works. It's a really pretty movie. It's dated. It kind of has a late 90s meets mid 80s aesthetic, but it really is like bright and sunny, and it's weirdly mixed messages, and I love that. It's
a crazy, crazy movie, and it's the kind of thing that, again, if you ever tried to repeat that success, you would fail, because it's just everything came together in this very perfect way.
So note to producers of the remake of Starship Troopers,
sort of by chance, sort of on purpose, but yeah, what a weird, special little movie.
And we actually tried to chase that dragon a couple times.
Yeah, for sure. And that led to us seeing Battlefield Earth the opening day.
Opening day, not night. Opening.
No, first show, man.
We saw Battlefield Earth expecting a hilarious, and it was just tedious and long and horrible.
And Hollow Man, too. We went to see Hollow Man as soon as
Paul
it opened.
Verhoeven,
like, oh, this is his follow-up, man. No.
There's even a way, I remember we saw Billy Madison. I like Billy Madison. It's a very fun movie. And there's not a lot of comedies out there like Billy Madison. It will not make my top five list this week. But I loved it. It was so fun and goofy and silly, and it's quotable. And I remember we saw High School High. Yeah. It was just like, this
we
is
were
another.
Forever trying oh, to find you chase the next that,
you know. You capture this thing, you find this thing, and you 90% of the time you stumble upon it. You don't know what you're getting yourself into, and right. all of a sudden it's like, how do I get back to that level?
Yeah, yeah.
So Starship Troopers is great, and yes. I wrote about it briefly in the Thanksgiving thing too. So.
And now your number one favorite movie of all time.
Listen, I know I bashed The Eagle a lot, but I finally got a chance to watch it.
Channing Tatum, everyone.
This is
scandalous.
He is in everything. Whoa, why are you biting me over? This is scandalous. That was not Channing Tatum. That was like Vinnie Barbarino.
Yeah, sort of meets Stallone, sort of, but more like a Frank Stallone.
Frank Stallone. My number one movie of all time is not a joke. It's very serious.
Yes.
It is 1946's. What?
It's later than I thought.
JB, did I just blow your hair back with my black and white retro pick? It's A Wonderful Life is my favorite movie of all time. Forever and ever, this will be number one. And any list I make, where I said before, the previous Starship Troopers is always going to be up there, but the previous three, I love, and they're great, and I'm not taking anything away from them, but It's a Wonderful Life is I can't express how much I love that movie, how much it means to me, how great it is. I know it's saccharine. I know it's corny Capricorn.
Oh, look at what you did there.
But it's so wonderful. It's just a really perfect little thing. And everyone should see it. But I also recommend that you don't see it now. You don't see it in the summer. You should watch it Christmas Eve. You should watch it, if not Christmas Eve.
The movie has so little to do with Christmas, though. This is a fascinating thing, because Doug and I have been friends for 20 years. And
not yet.
All right, we're coming up on our 20th anniversary, everyone. So send your congratulations to fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Barbados.
For years, I've known this is his favorite movie. This is for as long as I've known him, this was his favorite movie.
Absolutely.
And I had never seen it until like a few months ago.
And you like movies? How dare you claim that you like movies, but you haven't seen this one thing that I've seen that you haven't seen?
I know. I had never seen it. I finally saw it a couple months ago, and then I just rewatched it the other night.
And you wrote about it, too, for one of your other, plug
for DVD Verdict. DVDverdict.com. Thank you, Michael Staley. But I just watched it again the other night. Very little of the movie has to do with Christmas. So it's so weird that it's such a Christmas tradition.
And you're right. And I think because, if you know the history, and I'm sure a lot of you do, and I don't want to
bore you. Who doesn't?
The history is that they made this movie in the 40s, and and I don't even know the laws or what actually
happened.
There were
no laws. It was a lawless society.
They made it international. They made it on a boat. It was in the ocean, international waters. A baboon was the cameraman. But they made this movie in the 40s, and after the copyright, is that the word?
Oh, did they? Yeah. What happened there? Did they forget to put it on?
It was public domain.
Right.
I'm not sure what happened, honestly.
Because with Night of the Living Dead, they forgot to put
it might have been something like so simple where like literally, I don't know if it was like that, but it might have been something just expiring because it was in the 70s that the movie went public.
Yeah.
And every channel, every 2-bit crazy.
Every like UHF. Station,
but every like producer
all
of
the time.
Shitty VHS tapes too could crank out the worst version, the worst quality version, like a print of a print of a print.
Yes.
So obviously, in the 70s, the copyright or whatever expires, it goes public domain. It's on all the time. Like so, in December, as we all know, because we're all over the age of like 12, that this was the movie that you watched specifically and especially on Christmas Eve. It was on at least 4 channels at the same time.
Right.
And my family would watch it, and this is the reason it's so close to me. My family like would have their Christmas Eve festivities. We'd have like family over. We'd have a big dinner. We'd light luminarias in the street for Santa. It's Santa's runway, you see. And then we'd sing some Christmas carols, and then late at night, we'd put this movie on. I think it was my parents' ruse to get the younger kids to fall asleep quicker and to go to bed and so they could, like, I don't know, snort some Coke or something. My parents were big cokeheads.
They loved cocaine.
Oh, my God. Just kidding. They loved heroin. That I remember when I was very young that I used to hate this movie.
Interesting.
Because, and it wasn't even about the movie. It was like, what is this black and white, I love...
It's old.
Like G.I. Joe, and, I want to, like, open presents. I want Santa to come, and you're making, like, putting on this black and white movie. And that was probably, like, when I was between, like, 5 and 8.
Yeah.
And then 9, 10, 11, I would like stay up for more of it. And 1 year, a flip switched. And all of a sudden, a switch flipped?
There it is.
A switch flipped. And 1 year in my early, in my teenage years.
You were still
years,
in Starship Troopers mode, flip switch three hill.
That's right. And all of a sudden, just everything clicked and everything worked for me and I got it. And it now symbolizes in my family, like I'm in my third, and I still go to my mom's house. Now that I'm married, we switch off every year. But at my mom's house, Christmas Eve, you put on this movie and you don't have to like watch the whole thing. You can talk and have Christmas cookies and whatever. And but it's so indicative of that, and it will always be home to me. It'll always be like I'm a grown up and I have adult responsibilities, but that is I am with my folks and I am with my family, and it's there. Nothing could possibly go wrong because I'm watching this movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I can't
argue with that. So now I want to tear holes in this movie just to shit on your choice. It's weird because you know
that's the reason I say watch on Christmas Eve. You don't actually need to, Patrick's point.
Right.
There's only the last third is Christmas.
Again, the movie existed in my head for years before ever actually seeing it because I've lived with it through other pop culture.
Right.
And there's
like the SNL sketch where Dana Carvey,
or just any episode of like the Flintstones or any cartoon or like sitcom or whatever where like a character is visited by an angel who's like, I'm going to show you the world if you weren't in it.
And well, that's also kind of Christmas Carol-y, too, which this movie borrows a lot from.
But even Christmas Carol is more like past, present, future.
Right.
This is like a very specific conceit. So you're talking, if you never existed,
here's
what life would
be like. Was the Family Ties episode Christmas Carol, or was it more It's a Wonderful Life? Because I know what you're talking about, the Family Ties.
But it's everything.
Yeah.
And I grew up knowing that's from It's a Wonderful Life, even though I had never seen It's a Wonderful Life. And it's fucked up because so many, you know, not that a younger generation is really going to...
He got really serious and pointed at me when he said it's fucked up. That's why I laughed.
Not that a younger generation is going to, like, totally embrace this black and white movie from 46 or whatever.
They should probably just remake it.
Because classic movies are sort of fading away. But, like, what was it? NBC? Somebody...
They bought,
you know,
yeah,
10 years ago or something, snatched it up, and now they show
it
once.
Right. A couple of people, like, Republic Pictures bought the rights to distribute it. And NBC now shows it once a year, not on Christmas Eve.
Right.
Like
so
early
now it's
December.
Like sort of this special thing, but access to it is limited. Paramount put out the Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray is really nice. It also has the colorized version if you're an asshole. So I grew up with this movie in pop culture, knowing it was It's a Wonderful Life. But so going into the movie, I was positive that the whole movie is like, in the first 15 minutes, he's miserable. And then someone says, let me show you the world without you in it. And then at the end of the movie, he's like, you're right, It's a Wonderful Life. But no.
He looks at the camera and says, it's a wonderful life.
That's like the last half hour of the movie. And what I don't, and again, I'm not going to knock the movie because.
No. Go ahead.
Even if I did,
go
it
ahead.
Wouldn't...
For real. Try. Just try.
Even if I did, it wouldn't matter because it has such a special place in your heart. But, like, it's great. It's very charming. Jimmy Stewart's awesome. Donna Reed is a fox. And their scenes are great. And the dialogue is... You know, it just makes you sad that, like, movies aren't interested in dialogue the way that they once were. And, like, how fast and clever. Everyone is smart.
Right.
Everyone's witty. Everyone's kind of funny. Like, it's just... The back and forth is great. The first hour of the movie is so great. Okay, then it starts to get kind of miserable, and part of that is just the character's journey that things need to get bad for him. But, like, I would have been fine with a version of It's a Wonderful Life with no angel and no let me show you the way. I don't... Again, it's beside the point for me to say, like, why does Dorothy need to go to Oz? Like, are you fucking kidding me? You're going to question this thing? Like, why do we sing Happy Birthday?
Clarence Oddbody?
Right, just...
AS2?
I felt like...
Angel, second class.
It feels a little bit like an afterthought, and the movie doesn't need it, that he could have learned these same lessons without, like, being shown the world without him in it. Also, this struck me as very odd, especially watching it this most recent time. It's the movie... is really preoccupied with money. And, like, I understand that, like, it's part of the metaphor that, like, you're the richest man in town or alive or whatever. And by rich, we mean everyone cares about you. You have so many people that love you and support you and are your friends. But, like, maybe choose something else for your metaphor than money, because it's really... And does that have to do with, like, coming after the Great Depression? I mean, it came a long time after the Depression,
and
so I don't feel like it's a reaction to the Depression.
Not a long time, if you really think about it. I mean, the movie, the Depression ended in the with World War II. I mean, the Depression was the late, I mean, obviously the crash was in the late 20s, and the 30s was the Depression, and then the we pulled ourselves out by World War II, by virtue of a war,
right.
We pulled ourselves out of this depression. And this movie came on the heels of that. But also the movie, in the first couple scenes obviously take place like in the heart of that depression.
Yeah, yeah.
Where in the early 20s, he's a kid. And then he's helping people in the 30s not lose their homes. And right. That's part of it too. This movie actually, to your comment about it being about money, and there's also, I mean, there's a lot of people who have issue with the themes of the movie, where money is not everything, and that, you know, I'm trying to find other ways to say that there's an FBI file on the movie way back when. There was an FBI file that said, when you paint a character like Mr. Potter as being a Scrooge and being tight with his wallet and blah, 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 this is a tactic of communists. Like, this was a movie that was, and I'm sure there's a lot of influence in that. You know, we obviously live in an era that's very cynical and ironic in the 2000s and 2010s, in the teens. Are we in the teens now? And that we kind of
in the 12s.
Have a different, lazy, cynical perspective of things. And I have to think that back then there probably were some, you know, things at play where they were trying to inject some messages that was above and beyond the story of The Greatest Gift, the book it was based on, or the short story it was based on, that they are kind of playing a little bit with the money and the economy and the power figures and the status quo and the, you know, all that stuff. That being said, I like how it ends. I like that, like, I don't know how else it would be done. I mean, you say don't use money as the
metaphor. I don't necessarily either. And it's not even that, like, don't use money. It's just, it's something about, like, the mania, like, the way that Jimmy Stewart is crazed to find the $8,000 that's, like,
right.
And I understand why for the plot, and, you know, it all makes sense. I just didn't expect it to be so preoccupied with money. I don't know. That it sounds like such a stupid thing.
Yeah, I could see your point. I think it speaks to, and I'm not disagreeing, but I think it speaks to, I mean, yes, the thing is he's obsessed with this $8,000, but I think it's also about, like, his life in some very pessimistic, cynical ways in the back of his head, his life is shit. You know, like when he's in a bad mood, my life is shit. And this just kind of this is the straw that broke the camel's
back. And again,
this
is all in the second hour. And I'm not even poking holes in the second.
No.
I swear I'm not shitting.
I've never talked to you about
this. The first hour is like pretty bulletproof to me. And I had said the other day that like there's a logical ending point.
Yeah.
That if they somehow, you know, worked in another half hour where it sort of wraps up at the end of the first hour could be the end of the movie, which is just Jimmy Stewart sort of coming to the realization that like I've given up some of these dreams that I had about being Mr. Jet Setter and I'm going to go anywhere in the world and do whatever I want. I've given some of that up, but look at what I've gained in return. And the movie certainly lands there by the end.
Sure.
But by the end of the first hour, it gets to that point without a lot of this crazy, like, money, angels. Like, the second hour is just like, we need another hour of this movie until they add all this stuff on.
But I also love, I think that, I mean, I won't disagree because I think that you make an interesting point. I've never thought about that before. Mm-hmm. I know you talked to me about this on the phone the other day, but I've never thought about the movie in that respect because it's always been this package to me.
Right.
But I do, in a weird way, love this movie. Is not just about angels and the love of a wife and like this fantastical Capra-esque lifestyle of the 40s and this idyllic, you know, town. It's a really dark and kind of messed up movie at points.
Yeah.
And not just the scene where George Bailey, his face is completely frantic and stuff, but just how the things that are implied and the, you know, like the motives of certain people. And there's obviously the SNL sketch touches upon this too, that the Mr. Potter character, the Henry F. Potter.
And he never gets his comeuppance.
And that's a big problem for people.
It is for me too.
It doesn't bother me as much.
Oh, he gets the $8,000. Because that makes me crazy.
But don't you understand that, like, to your point though, like the end of the movie, like where he's George Bailey is the richest man. That's the victory, you know?
He gets the $8,000, but he's still a lonely piece of shit. I get it. But
so, like, I mean, it made everyone nuts. This guy who's the villain, I mean, like, his villain, like Billy Zane stamped on his forehead, that we don't see him get his comeuppance.
Right.
But there's so much else, like, just George Bailey's, I don't know, just his whole arc is so great, and how he meets the Mary Hatch, and how they fall in love.
Yeah.
And they get married. Even the sequence we talked before about, and everyone knows, it's the sequence where he is miserable. His brother comes back from college. His younger brother, who went to college first, comes back because their father passed away, and now that his brother's back from college, he's expected to take over the business, and George can go do the things that he's waited for 4 to 8 years to do, and his brother's married, and his brother's going to have a job with his new wife's plastics company or something. And he's pissed and furious, and he goes to find Mary Hatch, who also has gone to college. And they have a scene, and she's in love with him because he's great. He's Jimmy Stewart. How could you not be in love with him? And they have this passionate kiss that is that cut out 8 pages of dialogue or something like that. That is just this great moment of anger and frustration and bitter prickishness on George. Like, he's not this wonderful character, this benevolent. I mean, he is, but he's a human character, and I think that's so lacking from so much. Another version of this movie would have made him like two dimensional, like where he's always good and can't tell a lie,
definitely, and just sort of beaten down,
right?
But it's outside factors instead of his own weird demons.
Yeah, you know, he's got crazy. That's a great way to put it. He's got crazy demons. He beats himself up.
Right.
He's got these notions from when he was, you know, graduated high school, and he's like going to leave his dad. And he kind of insults his dad in a way and says this two-bit town, and he didn't mean to insult
his dad. But he says it like Jimmy Stewart.
So it's charming and great.
Adorable, yeah.
The movie was a failure when it first came out, and it was actually supposed to come out in 47, and they pushed it to 46 for Oscar consideration. The 19th annual Oscars, by the way. Just think about that. Which was really funny because 46, the movie that won, was The Best Years of Our Lives, and it was a very competitive year, and it had no chance. It was not, it was rushed out, the release was rushed out. It obviously lost to Best Years of Our Lives, which is a great movie. And the next year it would have had to compete against, I think, Miracle on 34th Street, and it probably could have beaten that, I think. Perhaps. Not to say that a victory is going to...
Right.
And my point in saying that all is that when it did kind of go in the public domain in the 70s and 80s, that's when it kind of got this huge reputation.
Right, which is crazy because you grew up thinking this movie has always been a classic, but it's actually fairly recent that it achieved that status.
And it's Capra's and Jimmy Stewart's. I think they both said before they passed away that was their favorite movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought, now JB on his podcast, and Capra's dead, so we can't ask him, that Capra thought his best movie was Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
I've heard otherwise, but I'm going to argue.
You guys should fight, and whoever wins is right. When we've done each of these favorite movie shows, I've sort of tried to like examine the five choices in a bubble and see like, okay, what does this kind of tell me about the person? And yours are, you would be hard to pin down based on your choices.
That's right. I'm a little crazy.
Though I think Inglourious Basterds and Wet Hot American Summer and Starship Troopers are very much of a piece. I think those three things tell me a lot. And the other two are sort of more sentimental favorites.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the other three all have sort of a crazy, like, this could go over the edge and fail in such a bad way. They sort of walk this weird tightrope, and it's the kind of success that can only be achieved once, almost by accident. You know, I think, and there's nothing subtle about any of those movies.
No.
Like, those movies are the opposite of subtle. I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know. I'm not really arriving at a point.
Which is to say also that I think that even though my sentimental picks, and I know you know this too, is that it's not to say that It's a Wonderful Life. I think it's also like a technically
That's not to say.
Absolutely. I just want to make it clear that like that, I think the movie above and beyond how it makes me feel, and it does make me feel a certain way, which I'm assuming everyone out there has something that they watch and that makes them feel a certain way. And that is not to sound saccharine right now, but that's what makes movies so awesome.
Absolutely.
Like, we can all sit down and watch
sense memories, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like you're immediately in this place because of...
Right. But movies. I also think that It's a Wonderful Life is just a masterpiece. I really do think it's like shot in such a way. I think it's very pretty.
Yeah.
It's, I won't bore anyone with the technical details, but all the accomplishments that they achieved too with, they shot it in the summer, a sweltering summer. So all the snow scenes, that's why Jimmy Stewart's sweating because it's 105 degrees. It's insane, and it's so great, and I love everyone in it, and it makes me sad because I think everyone's dead, you know, it's for the most part, aside from, like, the kids, like, they're all...
No, they're dead.
They're all dead. I think they died after Poltergeist.
Curse strikes again, and it gave us Bert and Ernie.
Yeah, although... Some douchebag producer of Sesame Street said, like, oh, no, that didn't happen. It's like,
You can't just make things up.
Well, it's like, even if you think to yourself, it might have been serendipitous. Like, that seed is planted 30 years prior.
Right.
That is like, no, this is what begat this.
Right.
And that whole, those characters are great. I love Violet Bickerstaff? No, Bick. Violet Bick, which is the one from Saved by the Bell.
Violet Bickerstaff.
So it's Violet Bick in It's a Wonderful Life, the blonde who's like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's
yeah.
like, you know, woman of ill repute, kind yeah, of implied yeah, yeah. in
she's
Pottersville.
She's going to leave, and then, yeah.
And it's...
But
it's,
George Bailey's nice to her.
He's nice to everyone, because he is yeah. like... It's all of his stuff. It's not just beaten down, even though he is by Potter and by just chance. It's all his personal stuff. He's not... He yeah, it's great.
Jimmy Stewart's a great movie star, and it's neat to watch him go dark, you know, in a Absolutely. Movie that isn't necessarily... It doesn't have the reputation for being dark.
He is
know?
The best. He's in Hitchcock stuff. He's... I mean, he yeah, fought yeah. in World War II.
Yeah, no, he's
it's,
awesome.
It's like... they don't make him... They don't make them like that anymore. I don't know what actor out there, like, we all love George Clooney. We all right. love Brad Pitt. Like,
right.
those guys are potheads and womanizers, you know? Like, they're great. I love them,
right.
but they're not,
That's
I mean.
A different generation, you
It
know,
absolutely but. Is. And
Well, thank you, Doug, very much
for
talking about
me.
Your favorite movies. I think you did a good job.
Ah, really?
Will you talk about my favorite movies with me next week?
Can you, real quick, before, yeah. can you fill out, I don't want to forget,
okay.
I have this little card.
Oh, a comment card? Or?
Yes,
okay.
it's got a number two pencil.
Okay.
Just fill out, just fill in the
I've
bubbles.
I've got a Dixon Ticonderoga.
You don't have to put your name on it, it could be
okay.
completely anonymous. just tell me what you thought about my performance. Do Doug's job for him.
You get straight fives.
Straight fives? Wait, that's out of 15. yes, I'll be back next week for
Yay!
Your favorite movies.
And then we could be done with this goddamn series.
And then we're back to doing what? Just one
just,
movie at a time.
Yeah.
Or F everything.
The old boring standby. So if you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com and visit our site every day. We have new content most days, I think.
I think almost every day. Yeah, we took a little break after the fest just to kind of let that sit out there.
But whatever, we can put that video up because I was bullied into that. So you guys can go back and watch that.
Yeah, that was a big mistake. Huh?
Yeah, I regret it every day.
Thanks for having me and spoilers
for
your show. It's Cuffs! Cuffs 1 through 5! Cuffs, 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 Cuffs. Thanks!